So last time working on trying to solve this transverse field Ising model exactly by performing this Jordan-Wigner transformation where we rewrite the spin operators in terms of fermionic operators. And where we got to last time was we wrote down this fermionic Hamiltonian after doing this transformation. So that was our first step in solving it. We're going to have two more steps. The second step is going to be our Fourier transform, as usual. And the third step is going to be getting rid of these terms that don't conserve particle number, like C-dag or C-dag. OK, so let's go ahead and do the Fourier transform. So this is going to be basically the normal thing where you plug in CK dagger is equal to 1 over root n, sum on j, e to the ikj, times CJ dagger. All right, so this is just the normal thing we do. But there's going to be some slight differences from the way it has normally worked out before because of these dagger terms. So for example, sum on I of, oh, let me call it J actually, sum on J of CJ dagger, CJ plus one dagger is going to be sum on K and K prime of CK dagger, CK prime dagger times 1 on n, sum on j, e to the I, okay, minus ikj, e to the minus ik prime, j plus 1, which is equal to sum on kk prime, CK dagger, CK prime dagger, times the normal piece, e to the minus I, K prime J. And then the thing that's different is that now instead of delta KK prime, we have delta K minus K prime. So basically the same idea as usual, but just we have to be a little bit careful because of this. So then this is going to become e to the minus IKJ, CK dagger, C minus K dagger. Let me make sure I actually use the same convention in my notes.
There is no J, right? Because it's sum over J.
Yeah, there's that's right. The sum over J got killed here.
The difference is IK prime, not IK.
Yes. So thank you. You are quite correct. Okay. Yes. You're correct. Thank you. Yes, okay, so I use the same convention. So, all right, so then we're not going to do the Fourier transform for every single term, but let me write down doing this procedure on all the terms what we get. Okay, so this is our Fourier transform Hamiltonian. And now the question is, okay, so we want to get this into our usual form, which looks like H equals sum on K of EK, CK dagger, CK. So the question is, how can we go from this form to that form? And the answer is that this is not really going to be CK. This is going to be some other operator. It's called AK. And I want to pick my AK so that this thing transforms into that. Okay, so if I look at this form of the Hamiltonian, I might think that this looks a bit like when we did problems like, for example, the two-site system, where I had H equals sum on K of C AK dagger, C BK dagger, dotted into a 2x2 HK, dotted into CAK, CBK, right? It kind of looks like this form, although, of course, there's not A and B, but there's K and minus K. So I think one approach is we could try to put this into this form. So if I was going to do that, then the naive thing to do would be to say, OK, I just want to, like, this term looks like CK dagger CK. Here's CK dagger C minus K dagger. Here's CK C minus K. So I could, analogously to this, try to write something like this. Right, because this would follow directly from this form. So like this upper entry here would be this piece. This entry here would be the CK dagger, would be the CK dagger C minus K dagger. So that would be the I sine K and so forth. Also, did I get a minus sign wrong here? No.
By specific arrangement, Q with dagger minus Q. Maybe the natural way would be CK dagger minus K dagger here and both the C's here. Or you choose the.
But you can't do that because I have C dagger terms, right? So if I did that, I would know where to get that term. Okay. So if we did this naively, we would find that we get the wrong answer doing this. Okay, so maybe to see why this is really wrong, this is basically a redundant description of the system, is the problem. Because K and minus K are not actually independent. Right? Or they're independent from each other, but like here I've summed over all the Ks. So a term that has like CK dagger CK is the same as a term with C minus K dagger minus C minus K. So for example, I could write sum on K of EK, CK dagger, CK, also called 2EK, is also can be written as sum on K, EK, CK dagger, CK, plus E minus K, C minus K dagger, C minus K. And that would change my matrix. My 2x2 matrix would go from 2EK and 0. To EK E minus K. And in general, that will give me different eigenvalues. So clearly, there's something that this approach is not really going to work directly. OK, so there's two ways we could fix this. One way is we could try to use the same approach, but we could restrict our sum to say only k bigger than 0, or like what I really mean is k in the range of 0 to pi, and then forget the other half, and then have two bands from 0 to pi instead of one band from minus pi to pi. So that's one option. So this is one possibility. The other possibility is we can just write down a form of this AK and then solve for coefficients to make it work and not worry about diagonalizing.
I have a question about the two expressions.
Yes.
It should be EK with minus E minus K. Because you are performing a anti-limitation.
Where? Here?
So it should be.
No, I haven't. I'm not doing any anti-commutation. I am just relabeling. That's all.
So the matrix element should be C minus K, C minus K down,
not
C minus K down.
I see. Okay. Okay. Yes. You're right. That's okay. Yes. That's true.
So basically, you are just shifting the eigenvalues by a constant. Does this really matter?
Okay, yes. Maybe this was not the right example, but okay, that is a fair point. But it remains true that naively doing this approach is not correct if we consider the whole range of k. If we restrict to only k bigger than zero, then we could write this down and it becomes well defined as the right number of states. But okay, okay, you're right. My example was not really accurate.
But the problem should be over counting, right? Like,
yes.
But we can write it such a way that we don't overcount.
Yeah, well, that's the first option, is restrict.
Restricting k, but I can write metrics such that it doesn't overcount the all samples. Like just,
what do you mean?
Manipulating the metrics, not summation. But for the first summation,
here?
In the upper bound, in the first right one here. If I write the first sentence in a matrix way, why does it overcount the terms? I think if I write it naively, it doesn't overcount.
So it's because I am. Yes.
As long as we overcount the term, it shouldn't be a problem.
Yes, okay, yeah. The problem is, okay, maybe let me say the problem this way is like, if we use the full range of K, then we get, Okay, maybe I don't want to make this argument. I mean, okay, so what you're saying, I guess, is basically true that like if you do this naive way and then you just later on forget about half of the k values, then this should be fine actually. But
someone get the feeling the second point will go exactly this
Yeah, it will, yes.
So second point is on the what then?
Yeah, I think the second one is exactly the ninth.
So, how is the second point different from this? Is that also being imposed that the coefficient of, say, a dagger will be zero to fix?
Yeah. Okay. Yes. Maybe I'm. I think you're all making good points, and so maybe I am Okay. This approach basically does work. It's okay. Somehow the problem, the thing I wanted to emphasize is the fact that you have to restrict k, and I think I said it in a very poor way. So maybe we should not get stuck on this and continue. But okay, yes. Yeah, so you're right that you can do this approach. Yeah. Okay. Yes. Okay. Let's just move on. So. Anyway, I'm going to use this approach, and I'm going to say, let's do AK. I'm going to say that AK is equal to UK times CK plus. I think I use a minus sign in my notes. Yes. Okay. Okay, so this is, we're going to set this AK to be some linear combination of CK and C minus K dagger, which indeed is what you would get if you used this kind of approach to diagonalize the matrix. I don't know, I suppose this is given by unitary transformation. Which would also imply that the AK operators satisfy the normal anti-commutation relations.
The
issue
is that AK dagger is not a K minus K, right? Or it's still a K minus K. How do you define A dagger of minus K? It's just same, you take a dagger and then change K to minus K.
Yes, that's all.
I thought the aim was to write it in like C AK dagger AK, right?
Yes. So,
it's not possible because that's one conserved number for should be different part of the number, different upper part.
So, yeah, what we're going to see is that you end up actually, when you make the substitution, you'll end up getting the right.
Okay.
Expression, which actually is only in terms of AK dagger AK anyway. So yeah, okay, I don't know how to motivate exactly how that's going to appear, but it will appear. Oh, somebody joined online. Okay, so right. So then if we have this our AK and our A minus K dagger as a unitary transformation, one nice choice of this UK and BK that will do this is that UK and VK are real, that U minus K equals UK, and V minus K equals minus VK. So we're going to assume these things are true, and then we're going to plug this expression, or the inverted version of it. So plug in for VK. And then we'll get an expression in terms of the AKs. So what that expression looks like is, let me write this down for my notes because otherwise it'll take too long. Okay, so we have a giant complicated looking expression, but now we want to impose the condition that the coefficient of this term vanishes. So in other words, that this thing should be equal to zero. So the solution to that is that we can let uk equal cosine of some theta k over 2, vk equal sine of theta k over 2, since they, u squared plus v squared equals 1, because theta is normalized. So we can always put it in this form, but then this becomes cosine of theta, and this piece becomes sine of theta, including the 2. And what that tells me is that the tangent of this theta is sine k over g plus cosine k.
That we just absorb the coefficients from the diagonalization into the definition of our definition.
Yes, that's right. Yes.
Can you comment on the unitarity of this? Because I seem to remember that both transformations are unitary in a different way.
I think it's just that it's unitary, but it has additional restrictions. Right? Isn't that Let's see. Let me. I believe this transformation, as written down here, is in fact unitary. Right? Like if you have UK. Minus IVK, then this other one would be IV minus K, which is minus IVK, and this one would be U minus K, which is same thing as UK, so you've got this. Yeah, and if you multiply it out, you should see that indeed U dagger U is equal to identity, right? But there's an additional, so there's an additional condition beyond unitarity, which is effectively is the condition that it must preserve the anti-commutation relations. So this transformation also does that.
And some entries give you minus k and u of minus k.
So this one is u of minus k, but I use this relation. This one is plus I of v minus k, which I also use relation.
Right. If the transformation is unitary, it's not necessarily implies that it's preserved the algebra. We just need to impose the transformation that should be unitary.
Yes, I think that's correct.
So this one should be on the same as diagonalizing that H.
Yeah, I guess that's right.
The unitary becomes valid.
It's your
same concept. If
your transformation
unitary, present
that. Yeah, I think that's right. Okay, so this tells us now that we can replace u squared minus v squared becomes this. G plus cosine k over the square root of 1 plus g squared plus 2g cosine k. And 2uv is equal to sine k over the same thing. And OK, now let's plug this all in again. And simplify. Eventually, we get this expression for Hamilton. So note, I've kept everything here. So like I haven't dropped any constant terms or whatever. So this is entirely equivalent to the original Hamiltonian. Or so I claim now, but we'll see in a minute that actually I've made a secret mistake a while ago. So here's our fermionic Hamiltonian, which now looks like it's the correct form AK dagger AK. And that piece is multiplied by some energy, and then we have another constant, so we have two constant energy pieces. There's this piece times the minus one, and there's this piece. So this piece we can now drop, actually, because the sum of k over all k values of cosine k is going to be zero. So actually, this piece contributes only a total amount to the energy, which we could normally ignore, but we're going to particularly ignore this one because, in fact, the amount that contributes is actually zero. Okay, so I'm going to write this in our final form as h equals sum on k of ek, ak dagger ak minus 1/2, or ek is equal to minus 2j times this piece. Okay, so this tells us, at least in a very clear way, what is the energy of my system, at least in the ground state. And we could also, from that, get energies of excited states. It's a little bit less clear from this what the eigenstates are, because we can easily get the eigenstates in terms of these AK operators. So like, you know, I have some vacuum states, and then I have AK dagger acting on zero is going to be some eigenstate of this Hamiltonian. But there's a question. It's a bit opaque at this point what this AK dagger actually is in terms of, say, the original spin operators. And also, this zero state is unclear as well. So both of these things are things we might want to actually understand better. Before we do that, though, let's take a quick look at the energies and what we can learn about the energies. So one thing we could do is we can check our energies in two limits of large J and large H, just to make sure that this answer is reasonable. Okay, so let's first check the large H limit. So in this case is where G goes to infinity, J goes to zero, but G times J is equal to H, which is constant, let's say. So in that case, EK is just minus 2H. And then the total energy, the total energy in the ground state is going to be just the energy with no states filled plus all the energies we get from whichever states we happen to fill. And you can see, because EK is now negative, we should actually fill all of the states. So all states are filled. So E is equal to sum on K of EK over 2, which is equal to N times, N over 2 times minus 2H, which is minus H times N. So in other words, the energy per particle is minus H, which is exactly what it should be, because we have all our spins pointing along the direction of the magnetic field. And so this is minus H per spin, it's the right energy. So far, so good. Okay, so then let's check large J.
Wait, do we give it in the summation?
Because this AK dagger AK is 1, because the state is filled, then I subtract it off. Okay, so the large J limit is going to be basically the same, but now we have that EK is minus 2J, because G is equal to 0. And our exact same logic will tell us that E is equal to minus J times N. So that also seems correct, because we have N links around our system, and each one has energy minus J. So energy seems to be working. We're getting the right total energy. Just for fun, let's get the energy at G equals 1. So here, I can write that EK is equal to minus 2J times 2 plus 2 cosine k to the 1 half. So this is just, this whole thing is actually just 2 times cosine of 2k. Cosine k over 2. So E is equal to n over 2 pi integral from minus pi to pi of minus 4j cosine k over 2. Which gives this result.
Are you missing an absolute value?
Yes, but it doesn't matter because it's only from minus pi to pi.
Otherwise, if you listen to the word, it will become zero.
No.
It's k over 2, right?
It's k over 2, yes. Yeah. Of course, I probably should include absolute value because then I should be able to write my k range in any range. But I mean, there's maybe more issues than just absolute value if you start messing with that kind of stuff. Okay, so we've been able to find total energy, so that's good. And now let's try to find some excitation energies. So in the large H limit, the excitation energy is going to be the smallest energy I can add to my system. So I add energy by reducing the filling. Since we have all states filled, I can make one state not filled that'll reduce the energy. So I'm going to unfill one state. And therefore, E is going to go to E plus 2H, since we said here that our every EK is 2H, or minus 2H. OK, so this makes sense. This is, I take one spin that's this way, and I flip it to point the other way. This had energy minus H, this had energy plus H. So indeed, this is the correct change in energy. Okay, then we're going to look at the large J limit. And so here we also unfill one state, and we get E goes to E plus 2J. And this, when you first think about it, seems right, but there's a problem. So okay, so where does this energy come from? This is like if my spins are like this, and then I go to a state like this, which has a domain wall. The cost of this domain wall has energy 2j, because I went from all the spins are aligned to I flipped one of them, so I lost the minus j and it gained plus j. But the problem is that our system has periodic boundary conditions. So we have some system like this. And in the h equals 0 limit, this is just a classical system. And the best I can do, the slowest excitation I can do, is to flip some number of spins that are in a contiguous block. And I get not one, but two domain walls. So my excitation energy should actually be not 2j, but 4j. This is a sign that something is wrong. Okay, so what we're going to do next is see the second sign that of the same problem, and then we'll talk about how we fix it. Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to plot the energy gap as a function of the parameter G. Yes. It could be more than two down. It could be any number down. The point is that if I have this and like I put my domain walls here, all the spins here are up and all the spins here are down. Yeah. This is energy 4J above the ground state. It doesn't matter where the domain walls are.
Okay.
In a sense, the domain walls act like particles which carry an energy 2J, but they come in pairs because we're on a ring. Indeed the periodic boundary conditions are the problem, but we'll see exactly how this comes in a second. Okay, so we'll plot energy gap versus G. So the energy gap we just want to find for each G, the minimum of EK. So that's going to be 2J times 1 plus G squared minus 2G to the 1 half, which is, minimum absolute value EK, 2J times the absolute value of 1 minus G. So you plot this, you have G equals 1. And this is my excitation energy. The first excited state minus the ground state. So there's another problem here, which is related to the problem we found before. Let's consider this point over here at G equals 0. In the original spin model, there are two ground states, or a 2D space of ground states. Here we have one ground state, and our first excited state has a finite energy. So our degeneracy has vanished.
What does k equal to pi until the amount of energy becomes zero, right? Maybe the other
thing is k equals pi. K equals pi is what I did to get this minus 2g, right?
Oh, okay.
So this what I'm plotting here is this is the k equals pi energy, which happens to be the minimum for each value of k.
Can you bring the upper down? I want to see the extension.
The problem is not anywhere on this board. The problem is quite a while ago. The problem is actually all the way back when we did the Jordan-Bigger transformation. Yes?
The transformations are always well defined. If cosine k, if the denominator vanishes in the transformation.
That's the Bogoliubov transformation. And that can only be not well defined. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Oh, that could. That's right. I didn't think about saying that. But okay, I think that's. You could write the transformation in such a way you don't need to involve the denominator. Like the denominator was used in solving it, but we didn't ever really need it because the energy in the end it only appears in the numerator in the actual energy, right?
Sure.
So that was sort of like a fake physics-y, not actually mathematically allowed intermediate step, which then it vanished, so we don't care. So the problem is much earlier than that. Yes.
In G equal to zero, all energy is equal in the subatomic form, right? Because it's not dependent on K anymore.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
But in G equal to zero, which means my H equal to zero, right? That's why you don't have any.
Yes, that's right. So that's this limit we're talking about. That's right. So in that case, we should get a two-dimensional degenerate ground state space.
Now the problem, all the excitations are in the same energy. Because
that's right. Every excitation, every elementary excitation gives you the same energy 2J, supposedly.
But this is also another problem, right? Because if my spin one phase means down, this is different. It has different energy, right? Because I have interaction, but I don't have magnetization.
That part is not an issue. I think.
But in this limit, I want to make sure this limit means I don't have magnetization, but I have interaction. Right?
Yes, yeah, that's right.
This limit I have different energy for my states. Because if I put it down, the energy changes, right?
Yes.
But the thing that we found for energy is not dependent on K anymore.
Yeah, but the fact that it doesn't depend on K is fine. Like the point is that, like what each excitation means is that you create a domain wall, you flip some things, but that it doesn't matter where in the system you make that flip. That's what it means. It doesn't depend on K. That it's like your domain. What it means is that your region within your two domain walls can be any size, and then therefore you have a flat distribution over X, which maybe that's not. It's a bit more complicated than that, but since it's a discrete Fourier transform, but anyway, this is fine. That's not an issue. Okay, so I will now tell you what the actual problem is, and we will finish dealing with it properly in Thursday's class. But the problem is boundary conditions in the Jordan-Wigner transformation. So, is a question? Okay.
Yes, we have dealt with that in the memory.
Ah, I see. Okay. So, in the spin system, we have some periodic boundary conditions where my sites go from zero to n minus 1. And I have a term which looks like sigma n minus 1 x, sigma 0 x. And I've written my Hamiltonian as h equals sum on I of sigma I x, sigma I plus 1 x. So when I write n minus 1 plus 1, what I really mean is 0. In other words, I've set sigma nx, I've chosen to be equal to sigma 0x. But let's try to do now my Jordan-Wigner transformation on the term, which looks like this one I wrote down here, sigma n minus 1x, sigma 0x. That's going to become product of L less than n minus 1 of minus 1 to the n L times C n minus 1 plus C n minus 1 dagger times C0 dagger plus C0. One thing I want to point out is when I defined the Jordan Vigner transformation yesterday, I never talked about what happens sort of at the end of the string, or like I sort of treated these string operators as if they go to minus infinity to the left. But that's not really necessary. If you have a finite system, you can end it on the last site, on like site zero, and all the anti-commutation stuff will still work correctly. So yeah, so in this case, like sigma zero plus is just equal to C zero with no string. And then sigma one plus is equal to minus one to the n zero times C one, et cetera. So that's how we define these strings on a finite system. This is another thing which I detail, which we sort of skipped yesterday. Now I'm going to write this in a slightly different form by factoring out this minus one to the nl from the site n minus one, as well as the existing sets. So we get minus product now over every site of minus one to the nl times something like this. Order.
What's happened to the
last line?
What that minus comes from?
Okay. Let me say this again. So what I used is that 1 minus 2n squared is equal to the 1 minus 2n is equal to plus one if n equals zero, and minus one if n equals one. Therefore, one minus two n squared is equal to the identity. And then furthermore, one minus two n times c dagger plus c is equal to c dagger minus c. So what I did is I inserted this factor of my 1 minus 2n squared on site n minus 1. And I added one of those factors into this product. And the other one I combined with this term to get the minus set. Okay? Okay, so the reason why I did that is that in H we wrote before, the boundary term was cn minus 1 dagger minus cn minus 1 times c dagger, c0 dagger plus c0. So we left out a factor of minus the product of minus 1 to the n over all sets. But now this actually turns out, this looks like it's going to make this a really complicated operator, but actually it turns out it's not bad, because we write this in the original spin notation. turns out this actually just measures whether the total number of spin downs in our system is even or odd. But H conserves. SC total mod 2. This implies that in each block of H, where H is block diagonal with two big blocks, one for odd number of spins up and the other one for even number of spins up. This operator is a constant. So the H we wrote down before is correct for one block. And for the other block, we need what we call antiperiodic boundary conditions. That when we write down n minus 1 plus 1 in the index, what we get is not C0, but minus C0. OK, so I guess I'm over time already, but we started a few minutes late. So I'm going to just do one more thing. And then we'll finish this next time. So the main effect this actually has, or has two effects. So one of them is a bit simpler. So the quantized values of K are 2 pi over n times a half integer rather than an integer. Anna, do you have a question?
No, got it.
Okay. And then the second one is the one that's going to be a bit harder to deal with, which is that not all excitations are allowed in each block. So like these excitations we talked about earlier, we get EK by the lowest AK dagger, is actually not really going to work. Because it turns out that AK dagger will change the parity of this number of spins and will actually try to put us into the other block. But this Hamiltonian only works within one block. So that's a sort of more difficult case, which we'll deal with on Thursday. Yes, and then also the plan for Thursday is to deal with that first and then to compute the spin correlation functions in this model, which is a rather challenging computation, which I'll show you at least the rough idea of how it works. Okay, so that's it for today, and just see you at the end of the week.
Can I ask about the
Yes.
So it seems that in the kind of network,
yes.
So here we can have the 2H.
Yeah, so it's going to turn out that the 2H excitation comes from the difference in energy from one of these, from the periodic boundary condition sector to the antiperiodic boundary condition sector.
I see. But not inside.
That's right. So the lowest excitation on the H side is going to be between the, actually on both sides, it's going to be between the sectors, but on the H side will have finite energy, and on the J side will have zero energy. That'll be our degeneracy. Yeah. But so yeah, we'll see it properly next time. Oh yes, I forgot to post them. I'll put them up. Yes. Yes.
I think I know what is the problem about that. Like, we shouldn't diagonalize that very often. Maybe the problem comes from k equals 0, right?
Yeah. So there's an issue both k equals 0 and k equals pi. That's true.
Maybe also there is another problem. Like, can we write this like this?
Hold on. Can I actually, one second. No. I'm happy to talk to you for a minute. But Asa, sorry. Since you missed a tutorial yesterday.
Oh, yeah, I've been submitted.
Oh, okay, good. Yeah, thank you. Okay, good. And sorry about the homework. Yeah, so when do you think you'll get it done?
I have no idea. I'm actually taking all of the classes right now. So
I see. Excel, you're overwhelming yourself. Yes.
Yeah, so I don't know. I've done like 1 through 5, and I've done a good chunk of 6, but just that last little bit, I keep going back and I'm like, I just got to do this other thing right now.
Like Charlie just starts thinking about things like, oh, I have this nice Feynman diagram. It looks bosonic. I can split it up into two fermions. Let me stand at the blackboard.
I just have only so much time. I'm not sure.
Okay.
I don't know yet. Yeah. When should I let you know by? Like sooner rather than later?
Yeah. I mean, basically, the TA has started grading them or marking them. So, like, you know, the deadline is roughly when he finishes doing that, because I just don't want him to have to like be done and then start to have more things to start again. Yeah.
All right, I'll decide very soon.
Okay, yeah.
We can grade out
of the No, it just ran out of time, unfortunately. But yeah, I don't know. I somehow took 3 weeks for what I thought was gonna be the first 2 weeks, and then I was a week behind.
Most, if not all,
courses. I guess I figured that I had the excuse that this is my first time teaching this course, so I don't know how long things take. But haven't most of the courses been taught by the same person for many years? You would think that they would know how long things take by now.
The courses are better, but the
electives. Yeah. Okay, that makes sense.
I think the problem is, in general, I can assume these two are different particles, right? Because
you have to be able to assume that. That's right. So that's what I was talking about, how you can, the way you would solve this is you restrict to only k bigger than 0, in which case, because it's minus k and that's k, it's all right.
Yeah.
But in this case, but there's a problem at k equals 0 and k equals pi.
Yeah.
So you can take those out and treat them separately. That does work.
In the case that we assume all k becomes 0 k, like the first rough method. I think the problem comes from the fact that if I diagonalize this like this, so here I have different type of fermion. It's not necessary with this condition. But when we do Bogoliubov transformation, we want these two be in this way, right?
So yes.
Another problem can be this. When I diagonalize this, roughly these are two different type of fermions. I don't have this condition anymore because it has no meaning here. I don't know, how can I say, for example, this guy is the dagger of this guy in minus k. And I diagonalize, does it have any meaning for this? But in Bogoliubov,
right.
I think another problem comes from here. I have like bigger Hilbert spaces.
So that's right. So there is a way to do to diagonalize it, and it still imposes condition, which is what I was saying, where you only use half the k's, and then you have to write this piece of the Hamiltonian, the term in a particular form, which I don't remember what the exact conditions are, but
thanks.
Yeah.